Welcome to the Soul Summit podcast. I'm your host, Courtney Preedy. I'm here to help bridge the gap for women and families in the outdoors, build a community of adventure junkies, and roll out your weekly dose of positive vibes. With almost two decades in the health and fitness world and an untamable passion for hunting in the outdoors, my mission is to help you live your bucket list life and move boldly in the direction of your dreams. Meet us here weekly as I connect with like-minded outdoor men and women to discuss health and mindset, accountability, life and entrepreneurship, as well as all things hunting and epic untold stories. The Soul Summit podcast is brought to you by Maven Optics, Baku E-Bikes, Hoyt Archery, Onyx Maps, and Sawyer Products. For more information on these companies or to access the Soul Summit podcast discount codes, be sure to check out our show notes. Well, I hope that y'all are ready for this episode. Today, we've got our co-host, Heidi Stout, and she is interviewing Brian Barney of Eastman's Elevated podcast. He does some incredible things for the hunting industry, as well as running his own really successful podcast and works with Eastman's publication as well. They talk about what some of his biggest failures have been in the field and how he uses any of those opportunities for learning, for growth, and to continue his success in the field. We also talk about how those missed opportunities help prepare him and make him grow overall. We also talk about scouting, how much he does for his big game hunts, what he'd like to do more of, and how he utilizes maps for e-scouting, really enabling him to get a better view of the land that he's walking into without getting boots on the ground, and how he is successful with that. He also talks to Heidi about keeping himself mentally positive in the grind of the hunt. So when things are long, when things are hard, when things aren't going necessarily the way that you want, he talks about how to keep a good mental mindset and to keep himself in the game. He also talks about balancing life in general with his other work priorities and how he really promotes himself to show up in the best way possible in all that he does. He also talks about education and getting in the field as his biggest key to success. I think that this is going to be a good episode full of some tidbits and information, as well as a really good positive outlook and some good insight from these two. So jump into today's episode with our co-host Heidi Stout and her guest, Brian Barney.
All right, welcome to the Soul Summit podcast. I am your host, Heidi Stout. Today, I am truly honored to have one of my absolute favorite hunters, especially when it comes to bow hunting. Brian Barney, he is host of the Eastman's Elevated and co-hosts the Eastman's Bow Hunting Journal, Life of a Bow Hunter. Thank you so much for being here. I am just truly honored.
Oh, it's my pleasure for sure. It's you sound way more professional than I do. I kind of run by the seat of my pants for my podcast, but no, that's a good intro. Thank you, Heidi.
You are so welcome. You know, I was just kind of going through things and looking back at your goat hunt that I watched. And I think I even said this in one of your Instagram posts, like, I have nothing to complain about some of the conditions that you have been through bow hunting. I might whine and cry a little bit, but after watching that, like, I was truly in awe of what you did with that goat.
Oh, that's such a nice compliment. Yeah, it's, I love hunting those extreme environments, and those extreme environments, they just take the ultimate skill set. Like, it's the ultimate test for me to go in that rugged terrain where humans aren't meant to be, and to be able to push day in, day out, keep myself safe on the stalks, and then come out with a goat is just icing on the cake. So it was a wild adventure, and those are my favorite kind.
When you're going in, because, I mean, you go into the places where nobody has been, and those are the places I love to go because that's where you're going to find them, right? Like, how do you prepare yourself when you just don't know what you're going to find, you know, deep in the backcountry?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's like you kind of... you play it out in your mind how these hunts are going to go, and they never go as the script reads or as you played it out in your mind. It's always different. So like the ability to be able to adapt and overcome, or the ability just to be able to endure as well and stay out there and give myself a chance. And so, you know, I make these plans. I train and live a bow hunting 365 lifestyle to prepare for these hunts. And so when I get in those places, I just try to take it in stride, not get too overwhelmed, keep the overall goal in mind, and then just keep working towards it and try to do everything in my power to give myself a chance. And I mean, it is scary. Like even being a seasoned bow hunter, like I still get nervous on these hunts, like especially going to BC and backpacking in this gnarly mountain range, like above tree line, everything's loose. It's dangerous. Like I get nervous for those hunts too, but those are the best kind. Like that's where we see the most growth, is when we, you know, push outside our comfort level and go to a place that scares us a little bit. And so I try to just embrace it anymore. And I've been on enough of these adventures where it's almost like I've been there before, I've done it before. And so it's just about moving forward, taking it day by day.
I think that's completely true. I think that's, I mean, whether it's bow hunting or just life, right? There's things that come up that scare us that we have to push through. Like, what are some of those things that you've used bow hunting or in life to push nerves or that fear when that arises?
Yeah, I think it's keeping like the overall mission statement or the overall goal in mind and not letting, you know, my feelings get in the way of that. Like when I get on a hunt, like that goat hunt that you'd mentioned, like, you know, I've ran 1200 miles to prepare for this hunt. I've shot 10,000 arrows. Like I, you know, and it's a combination of like culmination of, you know, 20 years of bow hunting that I prepared for this hunt. And so, yeah, I just don't let myself get beat down by a failure, a missed shot, a missed stalk. Like I get down, and these hunts have their highs and have their lows. And I just try to ride through the lows and enjoy the highs and try to keep like an even keel and not get too emotional and just work on what the next move is. Like, where am I going to find these game animals? Where's my next hike to? Where do I need to move camp? I just try to think of what's next. And then also it's like really fun to like arrow these trophy critters or to be on top of the world, to put all this work in and arrow a trophy buck or a trophy bull. But really, like the older I get, like the enjoyment's in the journey, you know? And so the enjoyment is like in the training for it, or the enjoyment is being on the hunt and being in the grind. And it's like a type two fun that, you know, isn't fun all the time. It's going to have highs and lows, but it's like the more I put into something, the more it means to me when I accomplish it.
That's so true. And I love hearing how many arrows you've shot, how many miles you've done, because we don't see all that, right? We see, you know, the video on social media or on YouTube, but we don't see all of those arrow shots. So it's so good to hear that, because there is so much work that goes into it. It's definitely, you know, not easy. And I've had my fair share of failures as I've been learning this. Is there one failure that really still sticks with you that you've learned from the most?
Gosh, you're like, this is like a real interview, Heidi, you're getting down to it. Like failure is a prerequisite to success. And so like I have failed, like you think you failed a lot. I probably failed 10 times what you have. Like I have messed up every shot, every encounter, like in business, I've, you know, messed up bids, or, you know, there's been problems that arise. And so like, I just try to overcome it and not let it get the best of me. And so like, I can't remember a direct failure just because there's so many of them. Like I could name any of them, but I seem to like use that failure as motivation to be better. So like if we take, you know, the season before last, like I didn't have a great late season. I was finishing my new house, trying to build that evenings and weekends. I had to move out of my old house. So my November was like shot. Like I had like a handful of days. I had some good late season tags and I didn't fill out on a late season rutting mule deer. So like it drove me to work harder, prepare better, to be able to allot more time in that late season. And then this year, like I was able to harvest a couple different great bucks during the late season. So that failure really pushed me to the success this season. And you could walk it back every single season and I could point to a failure that I've had. Like I think I've missed the world record mule deer. Like I got into range of this mule deer and it's been quite a few years back and had this great typical frame and I had to go down this avalanche chute down through these trees, position myself perfectly. And the buck did exactly what I wanted him to. I had this tree that I had ranged and this great big buck that was like 30 inches wide, had this huge typical frame. He came walking out and he walked right behind the tree and he stopped broadside. And, you know, knowing what I know now, like I could have ate a sandwich and range find that buck again and then shot him. But instead I had a range on that tree and I drew back and it, you know, like 45, 47 yards, held my pin on him, executed a good shot. Well, that buck was standing about 2 or 3 yards beyond the tree and I shot right underneath him and missed like the world record mule deer. And so like I've had every kind of failure that you can have, but I pick myself up, I get back after it. And I just realize that failure is the prerequisite to success and I'm not done failing. I'm going to have many more, you know, before it's all said and done.
I truly love that. I think that needs to go on a shirt.
I love it. We'll partner on it.
Yeah, there you go. Do you feel like there's, you know, when there are those failures, are there some common mistakes that you feel like bow hunters make that, you know, could help mitigate some of those failures that we often see?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely think there's mistakes that new bow hunters make, but I think it's just important to realize that everybody fails as well. And to realize that we're all in different places in our journey. Like, you know, to me, like I've dedicated 25 years of my life, 365 days a year to be the best bow hunter I can. So I've like hunted all these different places. I have all this experience. So my goal is going to be different than somebody that's 3 years into bow hunting. And so I think it's just important to realize that and like really work on their craft of bow hunting. Like, you know, if they love it and have a passion for it, like I do, like you work at all these different facets of bow hunting, whether it's your shooting or your fitness or your mental toughness or map research or like all these things that go into making you a complete hunter, and just realize that it's a long road. Like you'll eventually get to where you're going, but you're not going to get there in a week, a month, a year. And I think it's important too to like not compare ourselves to other people on social media, realizing that we're at our own place in our journey, that we're learning, we're improving, we're working on our craft, and that we will see that success and just try to enjoy it along the way, not be too hard on yourself. And I hear close encounters with bulls and with bucks from guys or from new bow hunters. And I hear it and then, you know, I kind of think to myself or maybe I tell them, but it's like, well, that close encounter you had, like I had four of those this season before I finally arrowed a bull. Like I screwed up worse than you did. Like I messed up my wind. I messed up. So I think it's like just important to not be too hard on yourself and realize where you're at on your journey. Comparison is the thief of all happiness. Don't compare yourself to others and then just keep working at it. And eventually, if you have passion for it and you put in the work, you'll get to where you want to go.
Yeah, no, I totally see that. And I see myself as the more I put in the most miles I have this last season. And I definitely improved significantly. Still didn't get where I wanted to be, but I improved significantly. So it makes me just that much more prepared for this next season that I'm super anxious for.
So 100%. Yeah. And that experience is such a good teacher. And it's like, it is the information day and age. So there's like a lot of information out there. And the trick is like being able to take that information, apply it to your own hunting and go have your own experiences out there. But there is nothing better than getting yourself out in the mountains and going bow hunting. Like those animals educate you. And the work that you put in this year will pay off in the future years, that experience and you learned on stalking and finding critters, like all those skills will all be there for next season and can be improved upon. So yeah, it's perfect.
When you're going out, you know, whether no matter what you're doing, like how much time do you spend previously in the area that you're going to hunt? Does it just vary?
It does vary. It's like, putting boots to ground is always going to be beneficial. So the more you can scout, the better you're going to know the unit, not only know where the animals prefer, because these units, they're big, and the concentrations of animals aren't spread out throughout the units. They're in like pockets of those units. So if you can find those pockets, it puts you ahead of the game, so you're not wasting days on your hunt. You know, I think also it like it's dependent like where I'm hunting. If it's, you know, Montana or Wyoming or Idaho, I live in Montana. So if it's a few hours away, I can scout it easily. But some of these places I go are 12 or 14 hours away where I just can't make a scouting trip. And anymore, like, you know, I've been doing this so long that I've hunted so many different units and I've scouted these units and spent time in them. But, you know, lately I'm so busy, and I hate to admit it, but I don't get the scouting that I used to get in. In fact, you know, hardly any, really. It's like some of these hunts I'll be able to scout a little bit more, a little bit less. And it's also like early season mule deer scouting is great, because where you find them in the summer is where they'll be in the season. Scouting elk is more like learning the landscape and looking for the sign and where the elk will be rutting, because where they summer is not where they rut. Hunting late season deer, well, it's tough to scout that in the early season, but you can learn roadways and vantage points and lookoffs. And so you can always gain information, and it is really important in a way to like give yourself a leg up come season. And it definitely pays off the more time you can spend in these units. But I've been so busy that I have saved my time for hunting. And it's like a lot of these places I'm going, you know, I've been to the units before, maybe I'm continuing to explore, but I have like this knowledge base that I can draw upon. And so it's like a little bit different for me, but I do want to get back to my scouting ways. Like I want next level results and to turn up some of these mind blowing bucks. And to do that, I have to put in next level effort. And so it's just carving myself out enough time in the summertime to be able to make these scouting trips work. So then I can use that knowledge come season. So it's definitely really important.
Yeah, I noticed a huge difference. Like when I went out for cow during rifle in a different unit, just I wasn't able to spend the time. So yeah, you're spending so much of the hunt just trying to locate where they're at and understand the lay of the land in those zones. So it's definitely critical for me, just being such a new hunter, to get out there. And during archery, I was near them, you know, almost every day. So, but I spent a lot of time over the summer scouting and putting my cams up and trying to understand, you know, where that herd was moving. And it made a huge difference for me.
Oh, good for you. Yeah, that knowledge base is key. And you know, if you can't put boots to ground, it's more time e-scouting, really learning the unit that way, and then maybe showing up a day or two early. And like a lot of these seasons too, like I got scouting in this year, like after I killed my bull, it was like I still have buddies that are hunting where I can still be out and about. I can still be glassing the mountains, and I'm actually glassing during September. And so that's like a crucial time for me to learn these areas as well. I'm scouting for the following season. And then, you know, like a mule deer, I filled out on a hunt and it's like, well, this is a new state and a new unit that I've never been. And so I took a couple days after I harvested that deer and kept researching around and glassing and learning that I'll use for next season. So it doesn't always have to be in the summertime. Like right now, if you hunt elk, like looking at them on the winter range and seeing what kind of bulls survived and the elk numbers. And two, you know, these elk, they migrate out onto the winter range and then migrate back in, but they use like the same migrational corridors and they use the same winter range. And a lot of the knowledge that I've gained shed hunting and things I use for bulls in my home valley. So when I get a snowstorm, I know these migrational routes. I know where their winter range is. I know where these bulls show up. And a couple years ago, I harvested a great bull in like one of these areas just using my knowledge from wintertime scouting or shed hunting.
Yeah, it makes a huge, huge difference. That's awesome. You know, when you talk about being so busy now and not having the time to scout, you know, how do you stay grounded, you know, with all your competing priorities, you know, managing your personal life and your business, and then, you know, finding the time to chase these dreams of hunting also?
Yeah, it's like, you know, I just try to do the best I can in like all avenues. So if it's like family time, I'm really trying to be present and be there and laugh and joke around and have dinner, not be on my device. And so like I try to get quality time in, or the off season, you know, we're planning family vacations and things of that nature. I think, you know, I just try to be efficient and do like how you do one thing is how you do everything. And so I try to carry that over into my business. Like these people trust me to build these houses. And so, you know, when I'm building somebody's custom home, you know, it's like I really have to make sure that I'm doing everything on my part to be a good leader, to make sure this job comes out, to make sure my guys have materials in front of them, to make sure I'm communicating well to my owner so they know that I'm going to be gone and who they can get a hold of. And so I just try to handle like all of life, like just trying to be responsible and be at my best. But it is a bit much. It's a bit like burning the candle at three ends right now. And so like I'm starting to cut these things off and to make more time for what I truly love, and that's backcountry bow hunting. And so I'm slowly but surely trying to take a few of these things off my plate.
The Soul Summit podcast is proudly supported by some of the top companies in the hunting and outdoor world, allowing people like us to make common bonds in uncommon places. So let's take a break and hear a word from today's awesome sponsors. If you're ready for premium optics without the premium price tag that comes along with it, check out Maven Optics. This consumer direct company is turning heads and winning awards for their top quality products. Binoculars, rangefinders, rifle scopes, and spotting scopes, they've got it all. Head to mavenbuilt.com. Use the code SOULSUMMIT-GIFT on your next purchase and get a little something extra just for listening to the podcast. Elevate your life and your hunts with one of Baku's top-of-the-line e-bikes. Whether you use them on your hunting and fishing adventures, for a hand around the farm, or to commute around your local area, Baku e-bikes are not only reliable, but they add a whole lot of fun to life. Find their full line of products at baku.com, B-A-K-C-O-U.com. There are some awesome bows on the market, but if you ask me, I'd say that Hoyt has some of the best bows around. Built tough to withstand the abuse of hard hunts, reliability in your shot so you can focus on the hunt, and a dead in the hand feel that keeps you coming back for more. Head to Hoyt.com and check out their new custom bow builder. If you're serious about getting into the outdoors, be sure to check out what Sawyer has to offer. From water filtration to sunscreen and insect repellent, Sawyer has you covered. Not to mention Sawyer's commitment to giving back, helping fight global issues, and bring clean water to more people around the world sets them apart from the rest. Head to Sawyer.com to see what they have going on. When it comes to hunting and exploring the great outdoors, there are endless tools, gizmos, and gear, but one I never leave home without is my Onyx Maps. Knowing I have access to landowner information, property lines, topographical layers, historical and wildlife data, and so much more gives me the confidence to take my outdoor experiences to the next level. Grab your free trial right now at onyxmaps.com. Now, let's jump back into the conversation.
Yeah, which always makes it hard. You know, what would you tell like your younger self, like when you were starting out? Is there something you would like advice you would give yourself when you were starting out to, you know, kind of chase your dreams a little bit?
I think it's just like follow your passion. It's like find what you truly love to do and put everything into it and you'll come out. And, you know, like I have multiple different passions, but really like bow hunting trumps it all. And so, you know, like when I have a passion for something like that, it's tough to fail at something that you work hard at every single day and put your full effort in and all this mental energy thinking about and theorizing. And so I think... my younger self, or I think anybody younger out there, is I think it's just explore some things, figure out what you really love to do, what you have a passion for, and then work really hard at it. And nothing comes instantly. It's like, you know, when I first started out, I was writing for free. I started filming for free, podcasting for free. Like, you know, I was doing these things because I loved it and I had a passion for it. But eventually, like, I'm reinvesting in myself. You know, I'm building this reputation and building this brand like brick by brick. And eventually, like, I have a house put together and I'm, you know, able to get paid to go hunting or to write an article or to podcast, to talk on a mic, which is so silly. So it's like, I think you just have find what you're passionate about, reinvest in yourself, take chances. Like, you know, in today's day and age, like, a lot of these people are reachable, and I have kids that, you know, want to work in the outdoor industry or want advice. And it's like, well, cameraman's a great way to go. Like, learn how to run a camera, learn how to approach different people, learn how to get opportunities, learn that thing inside and out. Like, if you have a passion for it and that's what you want to do in life, you can definitely make a go at it. It's just not going to come, you know, like bow hunting. It won't come in the first day, week, month, year. It's something that you have to continually work at.
Yeah, like anything. And I think, you know, it's kids these days. Well, I think anyone really, not just kids. They just want to start at the top and they want it, you know, be there. They don't want to put in the hard work or be at the very bottom just to learn and grow and take any opportunity that they can. And I think that makes a huge, huge difference.
So true. Like, not all kids are entitled. Like, there's some good ones out there for sure, but I do see the entitlement, like running a construction crew. I can't tell you how many young kids I have come on that want to run the entire crew or want to do the bid work. And it's like, well, this is how this works, is you have to pay your dues and be the best carpenter on site and know how to do every facet of building, from the concrete to the framing, siding, to the finish, to the wood floor. And once you can understand all that and wrap your brain around that, like, then you're ready to start stepping into the bid work, or then you're ready to start being responsible for other guys on the job site. But yeah, I see it so much where they come in and they've worked construction for under a year and they're ready to run the whole crew. And it's like, it's not the way it works in the real world.
Yeah, no, unfortunately not. And I tell my kids that all the time, you gotta pay your dues a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate, but it pays off as I see them do that a little bit. They are, you know, see the rewards from it, and they're much more appreciative too when they get there.
Oh, that's like your boys, right? It's like teaching those lessons to our kids where they can learn the harder they work, the more it pays off. When they can learn that they, you know, they have to be a journeyman before they can be a leader, and learning all these lessons, like, that's what we're trying to accomplish as being parents, is to try to give them the guidance. And you can't, like, you want a better life for your kids, but you can't just give them everything and expect them to turn out all right. Like, they have to work for it as well. They have to have skin in the game. And so those are the lessons we're trying to teach. And there's no handbook to being a parent. It's kind of like, figure it out as you go. And so you just try to do the best you can, leading by example, having in-depth conversations with them, and telling them the importance of these lessons and why they have to do it. So yeah, I love it. It's fun raising kids for sure.
Most days.
Yeah, half the days at least.
Four boys. I, you know, I'm waiting for the day that they run me out of house.
You got your hands full.
Yeah, nothing surprises me with boys. You know, when you talk about, like, your passions, and, you know, you have found what you're passionate about, is there, like, a specific experience? Is it a multitude of experiences that kind of said, like, this is my passion, this is where, you know, my heart is?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, bow hunting isn't fun all the time, but it's so thrilling and exhilarating, like, those close encounters and being able to, like, be out there and to be able to experience some of the wild things I've seen, whether it's the elk rut or the mule deer rut, or to get 5 stalks in a day, or, you know, just like these crazy times out there. You get to see, like, this wild stuff out there. And you also, it's like, it's given me a place to, like, be an adventurer. It's given me this challenge mentally and physically, and something that I truly love, that I'm willing to work hard at day in, day out. And so I don't think it's something immediate that I, like, oh, that's my thing. It's like, the more I do it, the more I love it. The harder I work at it, the more I enjoy it. And it's like, it's been this growth over the years. But yeah, I mean, I'd say, you know, I definitely knew that bow hunting was my thing and I wanted to spend as much time as I could doing it. So I think it's like finding your passion is like finding your enjoyment of life. And there's like nothing more enjoyable than for me, like disappearing with 10 days and a full backpack and a goal of harvesting a big buck and really pushing myself to my limits. So it's just like the more I did it, the more I fell in love with it, the harder I worked, the more I achieved. And so the passion's definitely grown. Like I think it burns hotter now than it ever has. But yeah, I mean, I think you just know. It's like when you find something that you love to do that you truly enjoy, I think that's what you can have a passion for. Now it's just committing yourself to it.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I feel like mine is just, yeah, growing every time I'm out. There's just something so organic and peaceful about bow hunting when you're out there. And when people, you know, say they hunt and they don't bow, I'm like, why don't you, you know, bow hunt? Like, you're missing out on the absolute best experiences, you know, during that time of the year. That's what I love the most.
Well, and the close encounters are so thrilling. It's like, I've done a lot of things out there and I have yet to been able to match like the adrenaline rush I get when being close like that. And it's just, it's like such a difficult challenge. And so it was just like the perfect fit for me and my brain.
Yeah. Like I am still baffled. Like I have had, you know, elk just a couple yards from me. And those things, they are so quiet. It is just amazing. I'm like, where the heck did you come from? You know, and turn around and they're just right there. There's just nothing like it.
Well, and their instincts are so keen. It's like survival is number one for them. And they evolve thousands of years from avoiding mountain lions, which are so stealthy and sneaky. And like these older age class bucks and bulls have been avoiding hunters for multiple seasons, in some cases, 7, 8, 9. So, yeah, it's like to get close and to have those experiences with those animals and to be able to participate in this predator-prey relationship, like it's just the ultimate for me. And then, you know, there's so many benefits, like the organic protein that you're able to bring home and able to provide for the family. And it's like, that's all my girls know is wild game for the last 20 years. Like beef is strange for them. Maybe if we go out for a steak dinner, but it's like that organic protein is so good. It's like such good, pure fuel. And then, you know, like I can feel good about it, like being able to provide for my family and feel good that, you know, that animal was taken fair chase with my bow and arrow. That animal did live its life out in the wild, like eating grasses, living in the mountains, which is a way better way to live than in some cage, you know? And so, it's like I really love every aspect of it and the benefits of it. And so, that's what's really grabbed a hold of me throughout the years.
Absolutely. And I saw that you did go mountain lion hunting. Is that correct? Just recently?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And yeah, how was that? Is that your first time you've gone out for them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's my first time I've been mountain lion hunting. So I just wanted to go experience it. And so a lot of people look at hound hunting. It's like the first one attacked by anti-hunters. And predators need to be, their populations need to be controlled just like ungulates need to be controlled. And so, you know, our biologists set quotas for harvesting mountain lions for a good sustainable population. And when they start to overpopulate, they get in developments, they can over harvest deer and bring populations down. And so they need to be controlled. And I just always see the fight being taken to the hound hunters. And so I just really wanted to go experience it. And I actually missed out, Heidi. I had my hound guy send me a text last night at 9:30 and he had a tom track. And he said, if you can get here, we'll chase this tom. And then I had a podcast scheduled for the morning, had this one, had work lined up. And I'm like, oh man, I just can't make it tomorrow. And so he sent me a picture of that tom treed and said, well, you should have been here. But I got the experience I was looking for. So it's like such an adventure. Those guys and gals, like I hunted with a mountain lion gal. She's one of the best in the business. And you talk about a hardcore gal and really knowledgeable. And her dad used to hunt with hounds and doesn't any longer, but she kind of took over, and she's like really known as a really good breeder and a good trainer, and her dogs are better than anybody else's dogs because they get more experience. They're constantly running lions and running bears and training these dogs. And so like to be able to step into their world a little bit, see their love for their dogs, their favorite dog rides in the front of the pickup and is allowed in the house, and like to see how well the dogs are cared for, how much pride they take in the training, and really like the bow hunting. It's not like I'm going to sneak up on the mountain lion, like shooting one with a bow. That isn't the thrill of the hunt by any means. Like the thrill of the hunt is to watch them cut their dogs loose, and there's like danger. Like there's wolves where we're hunting them, and these wolves, if they find these dogs, they kill them. And my one buddy has lost 5 dogs to wolves, like in one scenario where the wolves got to his dogs that had a cat treat. And so it's like they let the dogs out, but they, you know, they're really good with reading tracks and sign and how old it is and how big it is. So I learned a lot there. They cut those dogs loose, and there's no telling where you're going to end up. It's like they have beepers and buzzers to get their dogs back, but once they're loose on a cat, it's like good luck. Those things are chasing that thing down. That's what they're trained to do. And so we let the dogs out, and they started heading to the deepest, darkest wilderness, and it's getting dark. And we ended up doing double digit miles that day, trailing down the dogs. There was a male and female lion. We ended up treeing the female, not the male. So we passed the female and let her go or whatever, and brought the dogs back. But yeah, it was just an adventure, and it was really fun to be introduced into their world that I had never experienced. And so now it's like I get a chance to like explain it to you, and I get a chance to explain it to your audience and my audience, and just be a little bit more educated when I see it come up on the ballot.
Yeah, that's one I don't know a ton about is hounds, and I don't know anyone near me that actually does it. So I am super interested in it because after I got my mountain lion this year or last year, it's one of the best meats I've ever eaten. So I definitely have it on my list every year now that I want to get one. But yeah, there is a lot of attack I see coming on them. And I think some more education for everyone on them is really critical.
That's incredible. Congratulations again. I had forgot about that. So this was this past year. So you were out hunting and then able to spot a mountain lion and like make a stalk on it?
Yeah, I was out for mule deer during rifle. And it was funny because it wouldn't have really even been on my brain, but my friend knows the area well that I was going in. And she told me, "Hey, Heidi, just make sure you have your cat tag. There's lots of cats in there." And I'm like, okay, you know, I figured I will not see one. And I hiked up the steepest part because I was trying to make the best time and get away from the other hunters. And sure enough, I was going along this ridge and I look over and one was just standing there. And I was like, no way. And so I got my phone out because I'm like, it's going to be gone in 2 seconds. And it sat down and just bedded down in the sun right on top of this ridge. And so I just slowly made my way across closer, and it's about a 233-yard shot, but I got it, you know, dead on the first shot. But because at first I was just like, it's going to go and it's going to be gone. I'm like, no, this is your chance. So let go of the mule deer and went for that. And yeah, it was definitely incredible. And got to bring it home whole. I packed the whole thing down the mountain because I wanted my boys to see it. And then they helped me harvest it, and we ate it, and it was absolutely incredible.
That is incredible. Good for you. Yeah, that's amazing. They such lethal predators, aren't they? Like the claws are so long. They're like a velociraptor or something, like an inch and a half. They're just like the ultimate predator. It's like if I had to kill things by jumping on their back and biting their neck, I wouldn't have nearly the kills that I do. That's for sure. No, they're an amazing critter. And by doing that, like, you know, they're killing a deer a week at least. And so you're really helping that mule deer population in that area where you were mule deer hunting. And so, yeah, I think that's great. And it's really good to hear the meat so good. It's like a white meat, right?
Yeah. Everyone says it tastes like pork, and I would say that is the best resemblance of the meat. Yeah. I roasted it, slow roasted it all day. And I was expecting, like, I've heard different things. So I was expecting some wild taste, and I didn't any of it. It was like, I was shocked. It was absolutely delicious.
Oh, that's amazing. Good for you. Yeah, I definitely missed out today chasing that cat. I'll have to get on the next one. It seems like I've got to have a free schedule, which is the one thing I don't have. I like to like plan ahead, but it's crucial. These guys that are hunting these cats, is like they need that snow to be able to read tracks and read sign, and for the dogs to be able to pick up the scent. Like dry ground hunting lions is really difficult, and so constantly waiting on conditions, and then I'm just not sure when my buddy's gonna find a tom track. But yeah, you found one last night. I'm sure he'll find another one, and really it's like I was saying, like I got the experience I wanted, like being able to go on the chase and see them interact with their dogs. And like we have treed two lions and one bobcat, and the one bobcat they were able to harvest, it was like a male bobcat. So yeah, it's been super cool to experience, and just something totally different that I'm used to.
When they're treed, I mean, because I only see the videos, and obviously my experience was so much different. Is it just like, I would think I would just, my adrenaline would just be going having them, because they're so worked up usually when they're up there in the trees. Is it like scary? Is it, you know, what is that like?
Yeah, it's like, it's pretty wild because they're so comfortable. Like, the houndsman it is, like once those dogs get them treed, and so the advantage is the dogs have endurance, and so the cats kind of have like smaller lungs and are good for small bursts, and so it's never a given that you're gonna tree a cat. Like they're pretty crafty being able to get away, whether they use terrain or whether they use distance on their side. Or a lot of times they'll trick the dogs by going up one tree, jumping to another tree and coming down. And so there's a bunch of tricks they can play. But when you finally get one in the tree, it's fairly calm. It's like the dogs are barking like crazy and bang. And then, you know, my buddies are really like encouraging the dogs, like telling them they're good dogs and you did your job, and patting on the tree and having them jump up. And so they kind of use it as a training tool, but it kind of feels like a bit calm. I think it can get wild where they jump out of the tree if you just tree them fresh or whatever, but both the ones that I've been a part of have treed, and they've been pretty content just hanging in the tree. So it's pretty cool. Like you get to glass them up, you get to take pictures of them, encourage the dogs, and then back the dogs out. So it's not as like an intense high adrenaline moment as you'd think. I think like the high adrenaline comes when you hear the dogs barking and you're trying to get to them. And I can move through the mountains as well as anybody. My buddy is like a college football player, my houndsman buddy. And he gets that adrenaline rush when the dogs are barking and he's worried about wolves. And that guy can move through some country, like the roughest, gnarliest country. And he's just running to try to get to his dogs, you know? So I think the biggest adrenaline rush is like when you let them loose, when you hear them trying to catch up to the dogs, make sure there's no wolves around, you know, like it's a pretty intense moment until you get to the tree, it seems like.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I definitely have to put that on my list of things to experience. You know, talking about predators though, and you know, managing the populations, like what do you feel the state of hunting is right now when it comes to, you know, conservation?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's definitely more people that enjoy it than there ever has been. There's more people going hard than there ever has been. But, you know, I think it's like a renewable resource. And, you know, I think at times biologists drop the ball or are a bit reactive instead of proactive. But I think overall, like it's a renewable resource. And I believe that even though it's difficult out there and maybe more difficult than it was 10 years or 20 years ago, I think we do have healthy game populations, especially our elk populations. And, you know, the mule deer are still thriving in a lot of different areas as well. So like I feel positive, like there's still opportunity out there to go do it. I think there's still opportunity to go find your own experience. I think, you know, the state of hunters, like, you know, there's a bit of infighting back and forth, but I believe, like, for the most part, we support other people and we want to protect what we love to do in this like great opportunity that we have. So like, I don't get too doom and gloom over things and try to stay positive about them. And I do feel good about our conservation model. I do feel good about the front that us hunters are able to put on to be able to fight anti-hunting or groups that want to take it away from us, or you know, and it's not perfect. They just introduced wolves into Colorado, and I've been part of wolves being introduced into Montana and seen the decline in the elk herd. So I don't think that's a positive move, but you know, there's a bunch of different Western states out there, and where they make a mistake, I think other states are doing it right. And so, like, I hope we can continue to band together. I hope we can continue to have biology that sets our seasons and sets our quotas. And I think, you know, for now, like, I think there's still opportunity out there for the foreseeable future. I think we're just going to have to adapt and evolve with it. And I, you know, I've actually, like, I enjoy and love bow hunting so much, but it's also, you know, it's like, as I get older, I just realize that I really want to protect this for other people to have the same experiences, or the next generation to have these experiences. And really, like, I love to hunt mule deer. And so, you know, a lot of times I take a back seat, or I run under the radar. I enjoy what I like to do, but I really need to be more involved with donating my time, with being part of the Mule Deer Council, with, you know, really putting, you know, my money where my mouth is, and like being able to protect this resource that I love so much. So it's like a big goal moving forward is just trying to keep educated, trying to put my money in the right places that protect what we love to do. And then, you know, trying to stay away from the negativity and trying to be positive. And then, also continue to find these great hunting spots is like what I love to do for sure.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I just saw, and I could get it wrong a little bit, but this like Native American proverb, this is, you know, we don't inherit our land from our ancestors. We borrow it from our children. And I think the more, you know, anything I do outside, because I ski and, you know, I do all these other things, that I think it's so critical to protect, you know, hunting and our resources outside, to have for our kids and have, let them have the ability to do that. Do you think that there is a harder push from anti-hunters right now? Because I feel like sometimes that's how I feel the vibe is, you know, on social media, whether that's just always been there, and I'm newer to hunting, you know, it's hard for me to necessarily say.
Yeah. I think you have good insight into it. Like, it does seem like it's coming up, or we're taking the fight to these states quite a bit, or like we're battling to keep our rights. But I do think it's always been that way. Like, you know, wolves were reintroduced in Yellowstone, and, you know, like I was born and raised in Washington, and I remember bills of banning hound hunting there, and bills banning trapping there. And so I've seen it happen in multiple states, but, you know, it does seem like we are fighting on more fronts right now, that there is a push in a lot of these states. But I also think that we've never been more united. Like, these programs like HAL is a great one that really fights on our behalf and really unites us hunters to be able to play by the same rules that the antis are playing by, you know, with like not just voicing our concerns or talking about it with each other, but like being able to orchestrate our votes in such a way where we make a difference, being able to write letters to the people in power. So I do think like we're getting educated more, and I think we're more of a united front to be able to fight the antis. So, you know, I'm not sure if it's more prevalent now than it was before, but I think it's always been going on.
Yeah, I think everything's just, anything these days is just right there at our fingertips. So it's, we're just, I think, more aware as to, you know, what's going on than, you know, what wasn't available, you know, to see before, in essence. I think too, though, I like what you're saying about a united front, because that's really critical to me, to be positive and be supportive of each other. You know, are there things that you feel like as hunters that we could do a little bit better on social media to show that?
Yeah, I mean, I think with any group, there's going to be some bad apples, or there's going to be some people that just love to, you know, tear people down to make themselves feel better. So like, I don't know, you know, I think you're right. I think we can do a better job. And I think, you know, how we do that is like personally, like, you know, I've never put out anything bad on social media unless I'm talking bad about myself or something, which is fair. I probably deserved it, but I really try to be a positive voice in the space, and I try to encourage guys, and I try to invite them into the bow hunting club. And so like, I think, you know, I put off positivity. I try to put off positivity on my podcast. I try to, I try to be a good role model. And then I like, you know, there's this jealous, like jealousy can grab hold of us. And it's easy to do when you see somebody shoot a big buck, and it's easy to say, oh, he got that with a rifle, or, oh, he got that because he drew a special area, or, oh, he got that, you know. And it's like, it isn't positive for like our growth as human beings, and that jealousy will hold you back. And I've even seen it like with buddies that they don't want their buddies to succeed because it makes them look bad or makes them feel bad. And I think when you can start to turn that to be happy for people for their achievements, and look at a big buck and go, man, I bet he worked hard for that thing. Look at those dark horns on that thing, and look at the rugged country. And like, no matter what the weapon, no matter what unit he killed it, and no matter if it's private or public, I think it's like just looking at those things in that kind of light, you know, and try to put out that positivity and then spread it to like, you know, your hunting partners, and really pulling for their success and trying to help them along the way, help them have more encounters or get stalks or have plays, like really share information and be totally honest with your close circle of friends so they can have the same kind of success. And so I think it's like a mindset, right? And we're not all going to get there, but what we can do is we can put that out into the world, and people are going to follow that. They're going to hear that. They're going to see that mindset and go, God, that Brian's so positive. He's encouraging everybody. And oh, look, he reached out to my post and told me good job on that mule deer, and how hard I worked for it. And like, you know, then they're going to start spreading the word to their friends that way. And so I don't think it's ever going to be this perfect harmony, but I do think we can put positive out in the world, and that we can be better and more united for sure.
Yeah, because I totally agree with that, because to me sometimes social media can be so dark and just so depressing in some ways. But you know, one way I live is that I want to be a light and be positive, and I know I have people on my page that I am friends with that are not anti-hunters, but that's not their thing. You know, they don't want to see dead animals, and they don't, so I always try to be respectful too, and in how I approach conversations. And I've had them reach out and say, hey, tell me why you don't want wolves in Colorado, you know? And so I think by approaching with kindness and compassion and, you know, being a little more positive, people will want to have some of that dialogue that I think is really critical to all of us.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's the goal, Heidi. Yeah, you are so positive on your social media, on your own posts, on encouraging people, and I love that. It's like, you know, we get the chance to reach out to people that don't hunt or are not exposed to it. And when you can portray it in a positive light and you can articulate why you do it and what it means to you, it's like there isn't a person like some of my you know, like I've been able to have conversations with vegetarians that really respect what I do, and they're able to listen into what I do. I listen to what they do, and we're able to come to some common ground. And then when a voting initiative comes up about hunting, they remember, oh yeah, I had that conversation with Brian, and oh, isn't that beautiful what he does, you know, with his wild game, and his daughters eat it, and he talks about the appreciation and the wild animals. And so like, we're able to have those conversations with people that don't totally agree or like outside our own echo chamber. And I think those are the most important conversations to have. And I think also it's just like portraying it in a positive light. Like it's not that difficult. It's what we love to do, but it's like, be respectful. Like not everybody's in that situation. Like it's tough for antis to see a smile like with the dead animal or whatever the case is. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't have harvest photos, like I believe in that, but just be classy. Like it's like you don't want blood everywhere, you don't want a tongue hanging out, you don't want to be disrespectful for this animal that just gave his life. And in reality, it's like we're happy when we're accomplished our goals, but to be honest, like Like I, you know, it's like I struggle with the feelings of feeling good and feeling accomplished by harvesting an animal. And I also know that that animal just gave up his life, you know? And so I kind of struggle with these conflicting emotions, even with the animals that I've harvested, or even when a buddy harvests an animal. And so it's like the one way that I know how to show it is to show my complete respect to the animal. And that's by using every ounce of meat off that animal, getting every ounce of meat out, being respectful, like, or just being cognizant of that, you know, that it was a life that I did decide to take, and being ethical and trying to, make sure that I'm making a quick, clean kill and that animal doesn't suffer. And like, you know, that's a big part of my experience is making sure that I make that perfect shot that I've worked so hard for to give them a quick, clean kill and, you know, like a good death. And so, I think, you know, all of us, no matter how good we are at it, can just make a little bit better effort to show as much respect as we can and show our love for it, to hopefully have those in-depth conversations like you've had, like I've had, to help educate the public and show that, you know, that what we're doing, you know, that we're not crazy, or we're not out of our minds, or we're not psychopathic killers. Like, there's something like really truly beautiful with what we're doing in our interaction into Wild Earth, you know. And so I think that is definitely like the challenge.
Yeah, because I think, yeah, if some of these decisions are going to happen at the ballot, you know, we have to have some of those conversations and do more education and with people that will never step foot, you know, doing the things that we do, for sure.
100%. And most of them are like real inquisitive and like, or just want to know, like I'll run into people on the trails in Colorado and the first question is, well, how do you get the animal out? And so then, you know, you explain the field butchering process and being able to break it down in the field and not pack bones out. And then this is how we use the meat. We make burger, fajita meat, steaks, you know, I'll have pepperoni sticks. Hey, I've got a pepperoni stick in my bag if you want to try it, or, you know, whatever the case is. But most of these people, you know, like they're intelligent, and it's like we're so divisive in this country, and whether it's, you know, party affiliation, whether it's hunters and non-hunters, and it doesn't have to be this standoffish relationship. Like we all want the same things in life. And so to be able to see things from their side, to be able to explain our side, to be able to come together somewhere in the middle, and maybe hunting isn't for them, but if they can just understand it and understand why we do it, then they'll definitely be on our side of things, like when they come to a vote.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Is there, you know, I know you mentioned howl.org. Is there other organizations that you feel are, you know, fighting the fight that people can, you know, either donate to or somehow check them out so that they can get involved a little bit more?
Yeah, there's definitely like a bunch of them out there. And I'm a huge supporter of HAL, as I really think they protect our rights. I like the Mule Deer Foundation as well. And then what I try to support is all the Bow Hunters Association. So Montana Bow Hunters Association, Alaska Bow Hunters Association, as all these bow hunters association, they really speak up for us bow hunters and fight for our seasons out west, and like really represent us in a positive light when it comes to setting seasons or fighting for seasons and things. So those are kind of like the main ones that I support, but I'm sure there's a bunch of other good ones out there, you know, the Elk Foundation and, but those are the main ones that I support.
And this might be a totally naive question, because I didn't even know that there was like bow hunters associations. Does most states have one then?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Most states have them.
I'll be Googling that.
Well, I'm not sure if Idaho does. Aren't you located in Idaho, Heidi?
Yeah, I'm in Southeast Idaho.
I'll look up and send you a message and see if Idaho has one. I know I support the Wyoming, the Montana, and the Alaska one. I'm not sure about Idaho, but I should support that one as well.
We both can now if they have one. So yeah, no, that's extremely, extremely helpful. Now, people can find you on your social media. What do you have like coming up in the future here?
Yeah, social media, like Instagram's probably the best place to find me. There's some YouTube videos out. You mentioned that goat one that turned out, I'm really proud of that. Like it was a lot of self-filming and then filming with my buddy Adam. I think it came out really good to like be able to really show off the country. So yeah, there's a few videos you can check out there, and then there'll be a couple more from this past season. I think I have a couple more mule deer hunts coming out. And really just in like application season now of trying to plan my hunting season for next year. So applying in different places, you know, looking at a big spring hunt, you know, whether I travel abroad or stay here and hunt spring bears or both. So just trying to plan out my season there. So yeah, definitely best places, social media, and then check out those YouTubes, and there'll be some new ones that come out here in the following year, in this year from last season.
I feel like you've hunted everything. Is there something you have not hunted yet that you want to?
Definitely. Yeah, I've never had a chance to hunt sheep. I've hunted mouflon sheep in Hawaii with my buddies out there. They're really challenging, but I would love the chance at a bighorn, at a desert sheep. And a lot of the sheep hunts are just out of my tax bracket, where it's not responsible for me to spend that kind of money with my family and things, to where I'm like a blue collar bow hunter. I'm always looking for inexpensive opportunities, the do it yourself, where I do my own scouting, do my own hunting. So that's more in my lane, but I do apply for about every sheep hunt, every raffle out there, and have for the last 20 years. I would love the opportunity to hunt a bighorn or desert bighorn, and never say never, but I would love to hunt a doll or a stone sheep. But the stone sheep hunts are now getting upwards of like $80,000, $90,000, $100,000. It's just crazy to hunt a stone sheep, but I would like that experience sometime in my life. So I just need to get really lucky. So we'll put my name in the hat and see if it's my lucky year or not. So
I might have to just offer to be the cameraman for something like that, just to watch it unfold. That's crazy that people spend that, but I love it.
Oh yeah. Well, you're hired. It's such like a special experience. Like when you draw a sheep hunt, that you can include your buddies in scouting. And it's such like a unique opportunity that it's like, if one of your friends draw it, you drop everything and you help them out to the best of your ability. And when you hold a good tag, there's quite a bit of pressure too, you know, especially being a bow hunter only, like it would be bow or nothing for me. And so, I could use all the help I can get on something like that. And I think it's fun to go experience like somebody else's hunt to hunt sheep, because it's like the next best thing to being able to hunt them yourself.
Oh yeah, just being out there, yeah, whether I'm doing it or someone else, you know, for anything, I just, yeah, just to be out there and experience. I love, you know, people getting the experience for the first time too. That's just an insane feeling to watch people's excitement.
Oh, it's the best. Yeah, to be able to share it with somebody else. Yeah, that's like some of the most enjoyment I get, is helping buddies or helping new hunters, or like some of the adventures I get to do with my daughter. And it's really like an adventure with dad. And of course, like, you know, I go hard like I do everything in life, but I do cater the experience a bit to them, where it's like I want to push them to their limits, but they're not quite to my limits, or it'll stop being fun. But yeah, some of the crazy adventures I've been able to have, you know, just with my daughters, and really like traveling with them, like I'm able to have these in-depth conversations that we don't have at the house, like really dive into their life and talk to them about sports or school or friends or whatever the case is. So I really enjoy like each and every year, like going on an adventure with them, just sharing a bit of my world with them. So
yeah, absolutely. I know, I love being out there with my boys. It's, you know, when there's no internet, it's a great thing. You get some good conversations then, for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, well, the screens are just so addictive. It's like such tough waters to navigate. And they're like addictive for us adults. Like I can't imagine being a kid and growing up. Like I don't want to date you, like, but you know, my age, like when I grew up, we didn't have the cell phones or the devices or anything. And so, you know, it's been like this new introduction. But yeah, I even noticed myself that's so disciplined, and that I know that I don't want to be addicted to that thing, and I'll still find myself having too much screen time or looking at it too much, where it really does take discipline. But yeah, it's like tough to really pass that on to your kids, because it's such a part of everyday life and communication, to where if they don't have a phone, they're falling behind or they can't keep in touch. But it's such a delicate balance of not just yelling at your kids to tell them to get off a device, like giving them the why they should. And I think the best way is exactly what you're talking about, Heidi, is like getting them outside and getting them these experiences. And whether that's skiing, fly fishing, bow hunting, you know, trail running, like whatever it is, just to be present in that moment and be away from that device, I think is so incredibly important. And I know, like, I get to see my daughter, you know, like in her basketball games, you know, they, of course, they don't use their phones in training or during games. And I think that's like a really good daily break from her. Not that she's on it at school or anything like that, but yeah, those things are so addictive. And so that's probably our biggest fight as parents. It's just like trying to get them off the screens and to go do real things and live real life.
Right. And I know, thankfully they all ski, but yeah, I feel like winter is the hardest. So I'm originally from Arizona, so I'm used to good weather all the time for the most part, but winter, you're stuck inside so much more that we just can't, you know, get out and just get away from them, because that's usually the easiest way for me to trick them away from them.
Good for you.
Learning. You got to use what you can as it comes along. But anyways, Brian, I just want to say thank you so much. I appreciated this conversation immensely, and I look forward to, you know, what you're going to do this year. And I know you're going to kill way more things than I do this year, but I'll try and keep up best I can.
Yeah, please do. No, I'm excited to follow along. I really like your positivity on your social media. Really enjoyed the conversation. So thanks for having me on. And yeah, we'll do it again.
Once again, thank you for tuning into the show. We hope that your cup is full and you're ready to embrace your untamable vibe. If you enjoyed the show, could you do us a favor? Help us grow our audience by sharing your favorite episode on social media, sending the episode to a friend, and leaving us a review online. We love to hear from you. One more thing, be sure to press that subscribe button and never miss a weekly episode. See you next week.